from the land of the free and the home of the Chiefs. This is the Locked On Chiefs podcast.
Welcome to the Locked On Chiefs podcast. I am Seth Kaiser with The Athletic, and since you are hearing my voice, you know what time it is. It is time for the Chiefs mailbag. We're going to roll right into it. I'm going to do my very best to sound a little less tired than I did last week, but no guarantees because sleep has been something eluding me as of late as I spend my evenings pondering the mysteries of the Kansas City Chiefs. No, actually, I just couldn't sleep last night because I had a three-year-old flopping all over my face. But that's what happens when you have kids, I suppose. All right, let's get right into it. Mr. C. David, my good friend Charlie, he asks, who is our starting tight end two by week one? That is a great question. If you look at the Chiefs roster right now, here is the list of tight ends that I'm seeing. Blake Bell, Joel Fortson, John Phillips, David Wells, Deion Yelder. That's the list. I don't know. There's not really anyone on there who you're thinking, oh yeah, he jumps right out there. David Wells has really great size and ran a decent 40 time. And so, but you know, he's only got 1 year under his belt. He didn't play at all last year. Maybe some with some potential. John Phillips has bounced around from team to team in the league. There's really none of these guys instill confidence. And so here's the problem with letting go of Demetrius Harris. If you don't have a backup plan, that's rough. I'm not a huge fan of Harris. I think he was too inconsistent. But you got to have a backup plan. So I'm not sure what they're going to do. I really thought they would address it in the draft. I'm really curious if they are going to have fewer tight end, two tight end sets, or I don't know what. So that'll be really interesting to see. I guess if I were a betting man at this point, if I were going to base it on guys who have at least played a little in the league, I think it's going to be John Phillips. And for some reason, I have no basis for this opinion. I think David Wells might have a shot. No basis for that opinion whatsoever, though.
Today's show is brought to you in part by Hotels.com. Don't hate like your friend's trip. Book your own with Hotels.com and get rewarded basically everywhere. Hotels.com. Be there, do that, and get rewarded.
Albert Wilkinson asks, could Tyrann Mathieu face legal trouble or trouble with the league? Take a look. Google Tyrann Mathieu extortion case if you want some background on this question. Basically, what happened is there are a couple of individuals who are being federally indicted for extortion against Mathieu. The background story is that they supposedly lived with him for a while and he kind of cut them off. And then they said, we're going to, you know, say you did some bad things. And he reported it, saying, you know, it's completely made up stuff and that's extortion. You can't do that. That's illegal. They wanted like $25 million from him or something. I don't think so, no. There was a hearing where one of these two brothers got basically a bond revocation hearing, meaning that he'd kind of posted bail in order to not be in custody during this extortion proceedings. Well, he did something to violate the conditions of his bail, so then he got taken into custody, and then he had what's called a bond revocation hearing. And so at that, you gotta lay out why you should not be kept in custody for the remainder of the case. That's a very, very brief background on it. And they testified, you know, in open court there that like Tyrann Mathieu put a hit on them. They received threats on social media and all this stuff. Here's what I would say to that. People will say anything at a bail revocation hearing. Anything. I prosecuted for years. Some of the stuff people said there were, they'll say anything because their freedom's at stake. And I get that. It's also worth noting, not that one crime necessarily means another crime, but the person who's currently being charged, who's saying some of the stuff about Mathieu, he's also facing charges for unlawful use of a motor vehicle because he allegedly went to a rental company and tried to drive away with a car. When an employee confronted him, he freaked out. And then when the police arrived, he freaked out on the police, started screaming and swearing and throwing a fit, and then tried to like kick out the back window of the police car. Not the most reliable source in the world. So I would be surprised if it really amounted to anything. It's worth keeping an eye on. I think it's a good reminder to professional athletes that as much as you want to help people out, because the sounds of it, again, these guys start off as kind of living with him, maybe kind of freeloaders on his couch, frankly, you've got to watch the company you keep because people will turn on you. They absolutely will. Now, we'll see if it turns out to be something else, but that's certainly what it looks like right now. Keith McLean asks, which is more difficult, fighting Josh Briscoe or paying for his dinner at Q39? Man, we have really started a trend of, you know, who can Josh Briscoe beat up? I'm sure fighting Josh would be more difficult than paying for his dinner at Q39. Josh is just a wonderful human and very, very tough. I feel bad. I've started like this whole new thing. I don't know. I feel terrible about it all. Daniel Harms asks, all right, Seth, who gets more field time this year? Speaks, K-Pass, or Saunders? I think Saunders, but I don't know. I might just be affected by shiny new rookie syndrome, but I think Saunders gets more playing time. K-Pass seems to have fallen out of favor. Speaks, I can't really tell what's going on with him. So I personally would love to see what Saunders can do, because I've seen what Speaks and K-Pass can do, and it's not overly impressive. So let's give Saunders a shot. I think he surprises. Scott Loring asks, would you rather use Speaks at defensive tackle, keep Passanio as a reserve defensive end and cut Xavier Williams, or the Chiefs use Speaks at defensive end, keep Williams as a reserve DT and cut Passanio? Keep in mind, cutting Xavier would save you a few mil, and he's a 2020 free agent. The issue with that is there's no way Speaks is going to play a similar role to Xavier Williams as a defensive tackle. Xavier Williams is more of a nose tackle type, which you got to remember, even in the 43 system, you have generally a one tech and a three tech. You got guys that are more in a nose tackle role and then more of a penetrator role. Williams, besides Nadi, is the only real nose tackle type on the roster. Saunders is huge, but he doesn't play like a nose tackle. He plays like a penetrator. And so Speaks, there's no way Speaks, and I mean, people are loving to make jokes about Speaks right now, but there's no way that he's ready to play that role as a nose tackle. There's no way he weighs 320 pounds. It's just not possible. So I don't think that Speaks is necessarily a replacement. I do think either Speaks or Passanio is probably going to be gone at the beginning of the year with all the defensive end work that they've done. Andrew Whiteside asked, how many DMs did you get from Josh Briscoe's fans last night? A couple. Yes, that was I made a call for Chiefs Kingdom to send Josh Briscoe a bunch of DMs, which I feel kind of bad about all of this. Again, it's exploded into some kind of pretend feud. I'm not even sure how that even happened. So Lil Matthew says, KC will have 25 to 32 million in cap space after a few cuts. Spend it. Sure. As far as, well, here's the deal. It depends on who gets released into free agency. If there's a corner available, spend it on a corner. If there's not a corner available, trade for a corner and spend it on him. Extend Chris Jones's contract. That's going to break the bank. Extend Patrick Mahomes. That's going to break the bank. Probably after this year, extend Kendall Fuller. Then you do that, and then the extra corner that you've grabbed, and that's taking care of your cap space for the next year or two, at least for the big signings. That's what I would say. Mike asks, he says, got to keep on this. Pick one most likely. Number one, the Chiefs got Hill. Number two, NFL suspends Hill 6 games. Number three, no action against Tyreek. Plays 19 games. It's so tough to say. Without any new information, with no new information whatsoever, I don't know if he's going to have any action taken against him. I've had a bunch of people ask me this, you know, Albert Wilkinson, I'll go right into this, asked how long do Child Protective Service cases last? Could Hill stay on the commissioner's exempt list this season? Child protection cases can last for a year in Minnesota. Then they can also last for additional time if a permanency case, you know, looking to terminate parental rights or transfer custody begins. So, you know, a year and a half, 2 years. I had one case that was about 2.5 years that lasted because we blew past some deadlines. So it's just impossible to say at this point, but I don't know if we're going to get any more information on it. So we'll have to see what happens. And, you know, waiting and seeing is hard, but that's the legal process for you. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Today's show is brought to you by Grip 6, where their goal is to literally make the best belt that's ever been made. Grip 6 has a special offer for you at grip6.com/lock. That's grip6.com/lock. LOCKE.
Okay, we're diving in. We're continuing forward. Paul Sanchez. So, Paul, he phonetically doles out Sanchez. Ez for me. I'm really happy that my brand has now become Seth doesn't know how to pronounce anyone's last name. So that makes me happy. He asks, if we were interested in a player like McCoy that we knew was being let go, would it be smart to throw a 6th or 7th round pick at the team to prevent a bidding war when they hit free agency? Yeah, I think so. I think that's one of the reasons why they traded a 6 for Darren Lee. Lee had a good season last year, but he was maybe not going to stay with the team. They were probably going to let him go, but he's a good enough player to where there would have been a bit of a bidding war for his services. At least he had a good enough 2018. It's even more true with a player like McCoy. I don't think the Chiefs were interested. However, if you know a guy is going to get released, I mean, you might as well offer something for him. And that way, again, like you said, you avoid the bidding war. The one thing is, it just depends on the contract. Like with Justin Houston, for example, even though the Colts end up signing him to a pretty good-sized deal, it was the structure of his current deal that made it just impossible to deal him, even though teams knew he was going to get cut. And there was some interest from multiple teams for his services, from what I hear. So, you know, it's a tough thing. You've got to really toe that line, because otherwise you might wind up with a contract that you don't really like. Jody Aspison asks, can you talk about all the players they have in contract years? All of them, Jody? That's a lot of people. And how they can affect play on the field and comp picks the following year. Holy smokes. Here's what I'll say. That particular query would take up literally the rest of the time that we have. As far as people that could be walking soon that I'm actually concerned about, you have obviously Chris Jones. You've got Tyreek Hill, depending on how everything susses out with him. And you've got Kendall Fuller. Schwartz is signed through another year or two. So there's a few guys coming up. You know, Kelsey signed for another few years. So there's a few guys coming up, but I'll be perfectly honest, not a ton that I'm terribly concerned about. Not a ton, just a few. And so I wouldn't worry too much about this. As far as comp picks go, I'm going to be honest. I don't really care. I know that's not a popular take. People love talking about comp picks because it's free stuff. I mean, great. Free stuff is great. But at the end of the day, for me, while you should definitely make your moves with comp picks in mind, I spend very little time thinking about it. I think, you know, like if you're going to cut a player, you're going to cut a player. If you're going to sign a player, you're going to sign a player. The only thing you should do is at least consider the timing of things, if you can, to hopefully not affect your comp pick, your comp pick analysis. Because again, you know, best case scenario, and these are pretty rare, you get a pick at the top, at the very bottom of the 3rd round. That's not worth dominating my life for, right? It's not worth, at least, and some people might disagree on this. My good friend Kent, over at my old stomping grounds, he loves comp picks. That's my opinion of them. Tyler Payne Willis asks, do you think we aren't talking about Keith Reeser enough? I don't know. I mean, you got to remember, Keith Reeser has 50 snaps in the NFL level over the last 2 years. Then he has a few hundred prior to that. He did well in the AAF, very well. He was considered one of the best players in the league. And he, before there were some injury issues in Chiefs training camp, apparently he was doing well. And people thought that, you know, he might have a shot at making the roster. Then he had some injury issues. So I don't know. He's a long shot. And that's the thing with a lot of these guys. They are long shots. I hope he works out. But corner in particular is just such a tough, tough position. I think he's being talked about an appropriate amount as a sleeper. Angry Old Fetus, that name makes me smile every single time, says, do you think Jones should be at OTAs to learn the system and hang with all the new coaches and players? As a person, they are building this defense around. It would be nice from the leadership side of things. I understand getting hurt, but he is training anyways. No, here's the thing. He deserves a new contract, and this is part of it. It's part of contract negotiations, and I've seen a lot more players get hurt at OTAs than I've seen get hurt training on their own. Now, maybe that's just recency bias. Maybe that's just, you know, because there's fewer players training on their own, so it's just a numbers game. I just would tell you, this is part of contract negotiations. I want him to learn the system. I want him to be around the new coaches and players. But the deal is he's going to be a leader in the locker room whenever he gets back in there. And he's going to be a stud in the system whenever he gets back in there. They're not going to be installing new stuff like crazy until training camp. Now, obviously, this OTA stuff is important. But if the Chiefs thought that it was imperative that he be in the building, I'm sure they could make the offer that would get him in the building. This is just part of it. This is part of what happens when you have massive contracts. So I would just be patient. I think they'll get it done. I think Jones is the type of guy you build a team around, and I think they believe that too. Kellen asks, is Watkins a top 10 to 15 wide receiver if he theoretically stays healthy? In terms of production, it depends on whether Hill is around or not. If Hill is not around and Watkins is healthy for the entire season, I think he's going to have a monster year. I think he had a pretty good year last year, considering how difficult it is to jump into Andy Reid's system. And that's tough in year one there, and he still was on pace for about 1,100 yards or so. Then, of course, he got hurt. So health is going to be the big thing with regards to him. And so, let me see. We've got a great question here that might take a couple of minutes. So, I'm going to take my patented drink of water. Actually, this is Plexus, but that's a whole other ball of wax. I had someone ask me to stop doing that because it's precious seconds of their life they don't get back. I respectfully decline your very kind request. All right. Derek Shinton asks, can you explain what twists and stunts are in layman's terms? Hear this referred to frequently regarding New England last year and Kansas City this year with Daly. Can you explain this concept a bit? Sure. So what I want you to do is picture four defensive linemen. You know, let's call it a traditional, 43 setup, right? You got your four linemen, you got your two edge defenders, and you got your two interior defensive tackles lined up at wherever along the line, just on the interior. So I'm going to just kind of give generalities here rather than like, well, this is the slight difference because terminology is stupid. I firmly believe that. I try to avoid terminology as much as possible for this exact reason, because to me, it creates a barrier. Plus, I didn't grow up in the game like some people, and so terminology is befuddling to me. Plus, different teams, different coaches call different things, and you see these ridiculous arguments for minutes upon minutes about what things are called, and that is the dumbest thing. It's the dumbest thing. It's like both of you are right. You just learned it differently. Anyway, so picture you got your four defensive linemen, right? At the snap, rather than what you're used to seeing under a Bob Sutton defense, is the defensive tackle is going straight ahead, either trying to bull rush into the guard or center in front of them, or shoot the gap to the left or the right, you know, maybe using a spin or a swim or a push pull, whatever move. And then the edge defenders rushing the edge and either trying to get around the edge or sneaking to the inside, trying to go to the gap either to one side or the other of the tackle. Instead, picture at the snap, one of the defensive tackles instead heading a little bit outside and barreling straight into, let's say we're going to take the right defensive tackle, okay? So just imagine that Chris Jones is lined up next to Frank Clark on the right side of the defensive line, and Chris Jones at the snap barrels right into the left tackle. Now, the idea here is he's not moving straight towards the quarterback, okay? So the point here isn't for him to actually rush the quarterback. So he barrels into the left tackle, and the left guard tries to follow him, sliding his feet to the left. In the meantime, Clark, rather than simply rushing straight towards the left tackle, he waits for a second, then he loops inside around into the area that should be vacated by the left guard, who's following Jones. Now, Jones, in the meantime, is pushing on the left tackle, so the left tackle can't follow Clark. And the idea is a hole is created there that Clark can just sprint right through. That's probably the most common and the most simple of those types of stunts. And that's something that the Broncos have done for years with Wolf and Miller, and they've done it very well. Or another thing that might happen, like let's say you take the same alignment, right? You've got Clark and Jones next to each other. At the snap, he moves to his left, shoving the left tackle inside and squeezing him towards the interior line. And then Jones loops around to the outside. So it's basically, rather than just rushing the quarterback, the defensive line instead, they try to shove offensive linemen into one another, essentially, to create gaps for another defensive lineman to loop through. And ideally, if it works well, and New England did this very, very well last year, if it works well, you create an immediate hole for a pass rusher to go through. That is a super, super, super oversimplified version of it. And the reason people are talking about it so much is because Daly did a great job with it last year in New England. Spagnuolo did it quite a bit in his defenses. And the guys that they've brought in did it quite a bit with the defenses they were on. Okafor did it a ton where he was at. Ogba did it a ton where he was at. Clark did it quite a bit in Seattle. And this was actually discussed by Pro Football Focus recently, that the Chiefs did the fewest stunts in the NFL last year. They just rushed straight up. So that's hopefully a big change that'll come that could help the efficiency of the pass rush. All right, we're going to take one more break, and then we are going to dash through some more questions.
Today's show is brought to you by Untuck It. Dads come in all kinds of shapes and sizes, and so should their shirts. Untuck It is a solution that fits just right. No tucking or tailored required. Go to untuckit.com, promo code NBA to get 20% off.
All right, we're in the home stretch now. Let's do this. I don't think I've even yawned once. Steven Acton asks, a Sam linebacker will be on the field for what percent of the defensive plays this season, and what exactly will the Sam linebacker do in our defense? I don't know. The reality is we don't know exactly what Spagnuolo's defense is going to look like. The Sam linebacker responsibilities are a little bit different depending on whether you're playing a traditional 43 or a 43 over, all that stuff. I do think a Sam linebacker is probably only going to be on the field for about 25% of the snaps. I'm guessing usually when they're on the field, they're probably going to be almost wide nine. They're going to be lined up maybe across from the tight end. They're going to be placed almost as if, like, you know, envision it as like outside the outside linebacker, outside the edge rusher. And the primary responsibility, I'm guessing, is going to be to protect the edge and to potentially cover tight ends. That's my guess, but I don't know. It all depends on whether he runs, you know, 43 over a traditional 43 or whatever he decides to do, or 43 under. I mean, it's much more about assignment than alignment. That's something that I really need to turn into some kind of catchphrase. You know, assignment than alignment. I don't know. Anyway, Nick Abul? Sorry. See, this is why I have this brand. What's your prediction for Mahomes' stats this year? Touchdowns, interception, yards, and overall PFF type grade? I'm not going to do the grade thing because I don't do that. Does he regress from being the MVP or repeat? I don't think he'll win the MVP 2 years in a row because they generally don't award the MVP 2 years in a row. I'm thinking he throws around 40 to 45 touchdowns, 8 to 12 interceptions, and I think he throws for at least 4,500 yards. He can do all of that and be better than he was last year. It's just a matter of stats. Quarterback stats are wildly dependent on what else happens. The team could just run the ball more in the red zone. The team could, all kinds of things could change that would affect Mahomes' touchdown throw stats. You know, Mahomes could run the ball in himself a few more times. Mike asks, when the Chiefs switched to 43, I was excited to see how Dorian O'Daniel would fit in the Will spot. Me too, Mike. With all the offseason additions at linebacker, including Damian Wilson and the recent trade for Darren Lee, how do you think O'Daniel fits this year? I don't think Damian Wilson affects O'Daniel at all. Wilson's more of a Sam. He's not a Will. Darren Lee, that's direct competition from what I can tell. So I'm curious what the plan is there overall. I think they just really liked Lee. I think that's competition for him at the Will spot for sure. I think Lee played better than O'Daniel did last year. And so that's going to be a tall hill for him to climb. One thing I would really like to see would be those two both on the field at the same time on obvious passing downs. I think that it would be advantageous for the Chiefs in the modern NFL to have as much speed as possible on the field, and you can do that with Lee and O'Daniel. I would love to see more of that, but it definitely threatens O'Daniel's ability to take a step forward. Jonathan Mumford, are you happy with the Game of Thrones ending? I don't think I could take up. I don't think I could take up the time needed here, but spoilers! I'm not a big fan of tragedies. I really would have liked to see a super shiny, happy people ending. I really would have liked to see them, you know, even if it didn't mean, you know, the Dany ends up ruling the Seven Kingdoms. It would have been nice to see the two of them end up together somehow, even though she's his aunt, so I don't know. So, I mean, the whole deal, I'm not a big fan of tragedies. They make me sad. They make me feel bad for the people, even though they're fictitious. So, I was okay with it. I thought it was pretty well executed, despite being very rushed. I think they did the best they could with what they locked themselves into. But, you know, as far as happy goes, not exactly. I like happy endings. And if you're going to go unhappy, then you got to do it as well as, like, Angel did it or something like that, to really make myself seem like a nerd. Christian Gumminger asks, not to be negative, Nancy, what are the chances Mahomes takes a step back, similar to the crazy Cam Newton MVP year, and then since he hasn't been as impactful? I don't think Newton's a good comparison given how different their play styles are. And I also think Newton has been very, very good. I just think he got noticed more because the team around him was better the MVP year. And so I think he could maybe take a step back in the eyes of the public. I have no idea. It's hard to... He's got nowhere to go but down right now. I mean, he's considered, by and large, one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. The only place he has left to go that would be ascending would be the undisputed best quarterback in the NFL. And if he has another year like he did last year, it's going to be. Sam asks, will James Williams be the premier passing situation running back this season? He was our, and Sam does some work with PFF, he was our number one receiving grade running back in college football the last three seasons consecutively at PFF with a 90 or near 90 all 3 years. You know, that definitely sounds tempting. The question that I have with Williams, and here's where it gets tough for me, is with such a high grade receiving, why did he go undrafted? And I haven't watched him much, and I'm going to take a look at him when I get some time. But it is a little bit disconcerting that a guy could be that gifted at receiving, but yet just goes completely undrafted. Now, to be fair, the NFL makes mistakes all the time, and there's plenty of running backs who go undrafted who play well. So I'm not willing to rule him out completely. I do love the idea of getting a guy in the field who's another gifted receiver. I love the idea of them running a lot of two running back sets and really screwing with other teams' personnel and alignments by motioning those guys out. So I hope to see it. But we'll just have to see. Holy smokes. I just realized there are so many more questions that I have to go through, but I only have time for like three more. Maybe I've taken too much time on each question today. You guys, we're all clearly bored. So if I didn't get to your question, I apologize. And, you know, next time I'll try to get to it. Graham Oldfather asks, hey, Seth, another question about visor Mahomes. It looks awesome, but in your opinion, should he wear it? So Mahomes is wearing, like, this really cool-looking, slightly tinted but clear visor. Man, he should totally wear it. It's awesome. He would know better than you or me whether it actually affects his vision. And so I would love to see him read it. I would love to see him wear it. I think it looks cool. And so as long as it doesn't affect his play, I don't care what he wears. And it looks pretty cool. It's what, you know, you'd always put guys in Madden because visors look cool. Donnie Couch asks, did you like the way Byron Pringle practiced today at OTAs? Do you think he'll be number three wide receiver? Well, I didn't watch OTAs, so I have no idea. However, Pringle's an interesting guy. He was wildly productive in college. And if you watch him a little bit, the only time I got a chance to watch him in depth was against Trayvon Smith, and he absolutely destroyed Trayvon Smith in college when they matched up. Pringle's a really good route runner, and that's a skill that never gets old, and he was playing well in the preseason before getting hurt. So he is someone, definitely a sleeper to keep your eye on, a lot more so, in my opinion, than all the shiny new wide receivers they got this year. There are a lot of new names that people are excited about, you know, like Cody Thompson and Curtis Justice or Justice Curtis. See, you can tell I'm doing a really great job remembering names. I'll get there eventually. Jamal Custis, good Lord. You know, there's a few guys that people are really excited about. But I would keep an eye on Byron Pringle and see what happens there, because I think he's got some skills. ONH, this is going to be the last one that I have time for, asks, thoughts on Kansas City being home of the draft in 2023? I think it's awesome. I think it's a bummer that it's so far away, but it gives the city plenty of time to prepare. I think it's going to be a fantastic thing. I think you're going to see so many people talking about how great the food is in Kansas City. I love visiting Kansas City. I love going down there. I love the vibe down there. I love seeing Chiefs gear everywhere. I think people are very friendly. Not quite as friendly as they are in Minnesota, but that's not your fault. It's just, you know, it's Minnesota. I mean, no one's more friendly than we are up here. I love it down there. Mostly I love the food and I love the Chiefs and I love being around a bunch of you people too. So for some other people, obviously they won't be as attracted to the idea of being around a bunch of Chiefs fans, but I think it's going to be great for the city. I think people are going to love it. I think it's a great town and yeah, I think it's going to be awesome. And hopefully by then the Chiefs will be celebrating a Super Bowl or two. And so at that point, Kansas City's just going to look like this NFL powerhouse, which would just be a lot of fun. That's all the time I have. I am so sorry. I mean, you guys sent so many questions. Again, we're obviously bored. I mean, let's be real. And so I just appreciate all the questions. I'm sorry if I didn't have time to get to yours. This remains one of my favorite things to do about this job. And so make sure to send more next time. Make sure to check out the work that Chris and Ryan are doing at RGR Football, at Chiefs Digest. They put in the work. I haven't had a chance to chat with them. I've been just doing this lately, but they're just two of the best guys you can find around. I appreciate you guys listening. I as always, it's such a hoot. Yeah, that's what I have for you. Take care, guys. Remember, it's a great week to be a Chiefs fan. Thanks for listening to Locked On Chiefs.
Subscribe to the show on iTunes or Google Play. Follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Chiefs. Check out my work at RGR Football on YouTube, Chris's work on LockedOnChiefs.com, and all of Seth's film analysis at TheAthletic.com. Thanks for listening.